is a true queer hero, an icon, and Norman, this is for you.
They tell us that we should be scared of people who are different than us. As artists, we must fight back by representing those who are not represented.
Thank you to Freddie Mercury for giving me the joy of a lifetime.
I'm a member of the Society of American Archivists. There's a queer roundtable of archivists and archives, and I've been lucky enough to meet some of those other archivists. We want to make sure that things are preserved.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Chechnya continues its anti-LGBTQ purge. Hollywood celebrates a rainbow of Golden Globes. And queer history is safe in the palm of one's hand. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Carol Myers.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 12, 2019. There were new accounts this week of a revived purge of gay people in Chechnya. They follow a scathing report issued in late December by the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, confirming the routine harassment, disappearances, torture, and extrajudicial murders of sexual and gender minorities in the predominantly Muslim region of the Russian Federation that began in 2017. Vladimir Putin has consistently said that his government's investigations of Chechen strongman Ramzan Kadyrov, whose administration he supports, have found no evidence to support those charges. Kadyrov, who in speeches has called members of the LGBTQ community satanic and not people, has claimed that there are no gay people in Chechnya to persecute. An underground railway of sorts has helped more than 100 queer Chechens escape the area and seek asylum in Europe or Canada since the purges began. One of Russia's few truly independent news sources, Novaya Gazeta, which published detailed accounts of the crackdown early last year, is reporting that the renewed persecution of gay people in Chechnya began last month, though no one knows at this point how many more people have been detained. Some Novaya Gazeta reporters who first broke the news of the anti-queer crackdown last year have themselves been harassed and threatened by government authorities.
A post on social media to LGBTQ people by an activist group says that, "We ask anyone still free to take this message seriously and leave the Republic as soon as is possible." Mikhail Timasov, chairperson of the Russian LGBT network, told GayStar News that, "The persecution of gay people, both men and women, in Chechnya has never stopped. The scale and style of persecution has changed form at times, but since late December, the security forces have increased their activity." He said his organization would be releasing further details of the latest atrocities in the coming week. The December 2018 report by the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, issued before the latest account surfaced, found that several waves of violations of human rights and abuses of persons based on their sexual orientation and gender identity could be confirmed. It said that criminal charges should be filed outside of Chechnya because Kadyrov's own investigation denies his administration's culpability, and the region's judiciary can't be counted on to defy him or Vladimir Putin.
Hundreds of Christian theologians and two conservative members of the Dutch parliament have signed a manifesto condemning same-gender love as unclean, declaring that there's no such thing as a transgender identity and that marriage should be strictly heterosexual. It's been described as the Dutch version of the Nashville Declaration, issued in the U.S. city by the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood in 2017. That document includes a preamble and 14 articles about human sexuality and was signed by more than 22,000 people after about 150 Christian clerics issued it. Kees van der Schaight of the lower house of parliament and Senator Diederik van Dijk, each of the Christian-based Reformed Political Party, were the only two lawmakers to sign on to the Dutch version. Several other politicians strongly criticized them, one calling their actions disgusting, and another saying that the declaration represents steps back in time. Astrid Osenbruch, who leads the country's major queer advocacy group, COC, said the declaration is a merciless and insensitive action by the signatories. One Dutch news outlet noted that all of the signatories are men. Lawmaker and former pastor Ruth Pietum countered the document's marriage stance on Twitter, saying that where there is love and care for each other, there is God.
The Israel Medical Association this week banned doctors from performing so-called conversion therapy to cure same-gender romantic attraction, or from referring patients to such practitioners. There is a special danger, the group statement said, in referring children and teenagers to treatment meant to change one's sexual orientation. It went on to insist that there is no place for any treatment based on the assumption that homosexuality is a disease or a disorder that requires treatment. It said, according to a comprehensive review of the positions of similar organizations, that such treatments have been found to be ineffective and could cause mental damage such as anxiety, depression, and suicidal tendencies. Signing on to the report issued January 7th were the Israel Psychiatric Association, the Israeli Adolescent Medicine Society, the Israel Pediatric Association, the Society to Promote Health in the LGBT Community, the Israel Association of Family Physicians, and the Israel Child and Adolescent Psychiatric Association. A recent expose by Ynet News revealed an underground network of conversion therapy in Israel, primarily among conservative religious groups. That may have prompted this week's statement. The chairman of the Israel Psychiatric Association, Dr. Tsevi Fischel, said that any member of his group who practices or refers a patient to this kind of therapy is breaking the association's ethical code.
In other news, a federal judge in Texas rejected a lawsuit filed by conservative Christians to stop a drag queen story time from delighting children and their parents at a Houston public library. The nonprofit program, bringing drag queens to libraries and bookstores to read to children, took root in San Francisco a couple of years ago and has blossomed in other cities across and even outside of the United States. The group Christ Followers charged in the lawsuit filed in October that Drag Queen Story Hour promotes an ideology that is immoral, obscene, and subversive to human flourishing, and is inseparably linked to the religion of secular humanism. U.S. District Judge Lee Rosenthal announced on January 10th that the plaintiffs had failed to demonstrate that they could be damaged in some way by the event. She also disputed the notion that secular humanism is a religion, or that drag queens had discussed it during any storytime event. Tex Christopher, the lead plaintiff named in the lawsuit, told reporters that he planned to appeal the decision to the federal Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Meanwhile, a ruling in Colorado by U.S. District Court Judge Wiley Y. Daniel, issued on January 4th, cleared the way for a discrimination lawsuit by devout Christian Jack Phillips to proceed. If that name sounds familiar, he's the owner of the Denver area Masterpiece Cake Shop, who successfully won a U.S. Supreme Court decision last year that the state had wrongly prosecuted him for refusing to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple. The narrow ruling, however, which overturned a state high court decision, was based on charges of anti-religious bias by one member of the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. The official state motto, by the way, translated from the Latin, is "Nothing without the deity." This time, Phillips is fighting Autumn Scardina, a Colorado attorney. She wanted to mark the anniversary of her male-to-female transition with a celebratory cake that was pink on the inside and blue on the outside. Phillips refused to make the cake because he said doing so would violate his faith. She filed a claim with the State Civil Rights Commission, charging that Phillips had violated the state's anti-discrimination law. The Alliance Defending Freedom, a far-right conservative Christian legal group, represents Phillips, as it did in last year's Supreme Court case. It insists that he has the right to refuse to create custom cakes that express messages that conflict with his deeply held beliefs. The lawsuit that can now move forward seeks an injunction to prevent the Colorado Civil Rights Commission from considering Scardina's complaint against Phillips.
And finally, in better news from Colorado, the courthouse in the city of Boulder has been added to the U.S. National Register of Historic Places. Clela Rorex, who was the Boulder County Clerk in 1975, issued a marriage license to a gay couple after being advised by the local district attorney that state law didn't forbid it. Word quickly spread, and she wound up issuing licenses to five more queer couples before Colorado's Attorney General issued a cease and desist order. A plaque was unveiled at the courthouse on January 4th to commemorate the historic place's designation. The only other LGBTQ venues on the register are the Stonewall Inn in New York City and the Washington, D.C. home of trailblazing gay activist Franklin Kameny. Now 75-year-old Clela Rorex was at the ceremony. She said that in 1975 she was fighting for equality as a woman. "How could I deny someone else?" she said. An official Boulder County video documenting the unveiling ceremony and the story behind it was posted to YouTube, during which Rorex explains that.
It was a reminder that this action in 1975, as long ago as that was, still held out a moment of history for the LGBTQ community to be proud of.
The times, they are indeed a-changing. Also at the January 4th ceremony, Colorado Governor-elect Jared Polis, who was inaugurated a few days later as America's first openly gay governor.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending January 12th, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazor, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at the ever-updating thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm John Dyer V.
When you look at the late 1950s, the early 1960s, and the 70s, and you have the women's rights movement, you have the American Civil Rights Movement, the Native American movement, later on the farm workers movement, the anti-war movement, all these movements share a common experience in how things change. The LGBTQ movement took those lessons and was able to advance much more quickly.
Once history has been made, it must be saved. We'll visit with a prominent keeper of the flame later in the program. Direct from the heart of Hollywood, this year's Golden Globes delivered one of the most diverse award telecasts in recent memory and one of the queerest. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association gave queer biopics top honors on January 6th in both television and movie categories. One of the night's first awards went to gay Ben Whishaw for Best Actor in a Supporting Role in a Limited TV Series. Whishaw played Norman Scott in A Very English Scandal, the true story of the stablehand whose gay affair with rising Liberal Party politician Jeremy Thorpe made world headlines in the late 1970s. The actor paid tribute to the man he portrayed.
It is alleged that Thorpe and Mr. Scott began a homosexual affair.
That's me, on the telly.
I will talk, I will be heard, and I will be seen.
You were amazing.
I was rude, I was vile, I was queer, I was myself.
There's one person I really, really want to dedicate this award to, and it's the man who I had the privilege to portray in the show, Norman Scott, who took on the establishment with a courage and a defiance that I find completely inspiring. He's a true queer hero, an icon, and Norman, this is for you.
Glee alumnus and queer ally Darren Criss celebrated the diversity of the evening when he accepted the Golden Globe for Best Performance by an Actor in a Limited TV Series. Criss played serial killer Andrew Cunanan in The Assassination of Gianni Versace. Producer Brad Simpson drew parallels to today's intolerance when he accepted the Best Television Limited Series trophy.
As we've seen, this has been a marvelous year for representation in Hollywood, and I am so enormously proud to be a teeny tiny part of that as the son of a firecracker Filipino woman from Cebu that dreamed of coming to this country and getting to be invited to cool parties like this. So, Mom, I know you're watching this. You are hugely responsible for most of the good things in my life. I love you dearly. I dedicate this to you. Congratulations to all of you. This is totally awesome.
Gianni Versace was murdered 20 years ago. He was one of the very few public figures who was out during a time of intense hate and fear. This was the era of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It was the Defense of Marriage Act era. Those forces of hate and fear are still with us. They tell us that we should be scared of people who are different than us. They tell us we should put walls around ourselves. As artists, we must fight back by representing those who are not represented and by providing a space for people who are new voices to tell stories that haven't been told. As human beings, we should resist in the streets, resist at the ballot box, and practice love and empathy in our everyday lives. Our show is a period piece, but those forces are not historical. They're here, they're with us, and we must resist. Thank you very much.
Another real-life story took the Golden Globe for Best Picture, Musical, or Comedy. Green Book is about jazz pianist Don Shirley, portrayed by Best Supporting Actor Mahershala Ali. Shirley was a gay man who never came out during his lifetime. Last, but certainly not least,
is this the real life? Is this just fantasy?
Queen's bisexual frontman received tributes from Bohemian Rhapsody lead actor Rami Malek and producer Graham King in their acceptance speeches for Best Actor and Best Motion Picture Drama.
Thank you to Freddie Mercury for giving me the joy of a lifetime. I love you, you beautiful man. This is for and because of you, gorgeous. Mwah.
And finally to Freddie Mercury. Thank you for showing us the power of embracing your true self. This one's for you. Thank you so much.
Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters.
I'm Harvey Milk. I'm a supervisor in San Francisco, and I'm gay.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed.
And here comes the National March on Washington for lesbian and gay rights.
Today, being gay is not a crime.
This is going to lead to the legalization of same-sex marriage.
Today, I finally get to look at the man that I love and say, will you please marry me?
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump.
Cher was watching the parade with Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull.
Feels so wholesome.
For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. Previously on This Way Out.
There's so much history, and so much starts here in Los Angeles. First magazine, One Magazine. First organization, Mattachine. First church, MCC, Metropolitan Community Church. First synagogue, BCC. First pride parade with a permit. And it just goes on and on.
Michael Oliveira, head librarian at the One National Gay and Lesbian Archives, chatted last month with This Way Out's John Dyer V about queer pioneers and preservationists and about how the archives found a home at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. In the conclusion of this two-part feature interview, Oliveira begins by discussing the importance of other LGBTQ archives and their critical relationships with One.
Other archivists have come to our archive, and we've gone to other places. I'm a member of the Society of American Archivists. There's a queer roundtable of archivists and archives, and I've been lucky enough to meet some of those other archivists. We exchange materials because we want to make sure that things are preserved. And God forbid something happens here in Southern California, I want to know that there are materials in other places, whether it be Toronto or the University of Minnesota, so that that stuff is accessible. With archiving, what we look for are documents that have enduring value. We don't necessarily want everything. We want something that tells a story or part of the story. You can't keep everything that everybody produces. You've got to make some decisions. And I have to say, One has done something that I think is incredibly important for archives, is to document the everyday person. We want to make sure that we're documenting what it's like to be a queer person throughout time.
Why do you think that's incredibly important?
Because that individual experience is the thing that is all too often left out of the history books. The person that volunteers their time, the person that works behind the scenes, the person that saves things, it's the person that really helps create change. You can have wonderful, wonderful leaders, but if you don't have that army of people behind you, nothing's going to get done. researchers want to come in and they want to look at what it was like for an individual.
Are you excited about anything currently that's been utilized through your archive?
Gay LA by Federman and Timmons. There are a number of different works that talk about what is happening and people make connections. I think what happens is somebody expects that there's going to be a whole story at one archive. And in some ways, yes, there occasionally is. But for the vast majority of these stories, they're put together by going through a number of different archives and looking for that common pattern, that parallel. For me, that is one of the most important things that I hope people learn and hope people understand. When you look at the late 1950s, the early 1960s, and the 70s, and you have the women's rights movement, you have the American Civil Rights Movement, the Native American movement, later on the farm workers movement, the anti-war movement, all these movements share a common experience in how things change. The LGBTQ movement took those lessons and realized the importance of coming out and was able to advance much more quickly than all of those other movements, and I think was able to be more successful.
I've seen where you guys have the one gallery and you've done a big art exhibit, which I'm assuming they culled from your main archive body.
I think one of the really important things that happened when we became part of USC, we were able to hire a curator, and I really have to give a tremendous hand to David Evan Frantz. He really has been able to put together some really incredible, incredible shows.
And these are gallery shows, correct?
Yes. Ideally, what happens is we get the art, and we also get the paper documenting what the diaries, the photographs. How the artist decided to create that work or what the artist was inspired by, that is the ideal. Really, we went from having nearly zero available to having more than 650 collections, finding aids available online. I believe 2,500 images and thousands of documents available for searching. So it's really been transformative over the last 11 years. So many people don't realize that we're out there. We weren't necessarily wanting to put on a big show or anything. And that was one of the wonderful things that David, our curator, really did, was he was able to take the works of art and take the archival documents and reach out to a whole other community that we would not necessarily reach out to.
I'm curious what you would say to today's folks in terms of the importance of an archive like this when there is so much else out there to distract you.
There's a lot out there. Mainly we're there for researchers, we're there for students, we're there for people that want to understand what happened early on. Students that are looking to document or really learn from the lessons of the past. It's so important to see yourself in the history. These tremendous heroes, these tremendous people that were like us and really helped build this country. I really believe in the power of our ideas, the power to give everyone full opportunity. And when we don't do that, we only cut ourselves and our society short. I think we've just begun. I mean, it's amazing. There's more materials coming in. We have One Archives Foundation helping us to raise money and raise our profile. Jennifer Gregg is leading a team of people that are really knocking on doors and getting our name out there and introducing us to people that don't know about us, which is wonderful. It's a great opportunity.
We touched on the crucial importance of drag and trans folks to the beginnings of the LGBTQ movements, and one's critical need for volunteers who bring their life experiences and skills and become ambassadors for the archives, as well as the unbelievable stories of how some personal and historical archival elements were discovered and saved by sharp-eyed citizens of all backgrounds. While discussing the recent acquisition of a large leather bondage sling used in BDSM practices, I asked if an item like that would go into a gallery show.
It would if the gallery is going to have different theme shows. And I believe 2019 we're hoping to do a show on science fiction. Why were queer people attracted to science fiction? because you could talk about sexuality and gender in some distant futures.
The other.
Exactly, the other. Some other planet, something far away. And you could talk about this quite frankly.
We discussed today's horror film genre, especially in regard to the glorified victimization of women, and agreed that filmmakers could do well to observe things from today's new and enlightened sensibility. I then asked Michael for some closing thoughts.
Come down and visit us if you haven't come down.
It's free. I know I can point that out, that anyone's welcome to come. Just check the hours. And
right. Please contact us. If you're interested in seeing any materials, please go to USC Digital Libraries and look for One Archives. And you can look at the materials we have online. We have audio and film clips. But if you have questions, come down and talk to us. If you have materials to donate, come down. Give me a call. My name is Mike Oliveira. I've been there for over 10 years, and I really love the experience. Being there and meeting the people I have, it's made me a better person.
Because this is the story of one big family, ultimately.
It is. It's not only a biological family, but that is one of the really wonderful things about the queer community, is we build our own families. We build our own support systems. And we do things that are incredibly creative. It is an incredible part of our culture that we take something and we turn it on its head and we say, you know what, we're out here for love and compassion. We're out here to do positive change. And I think that is one of the incredible reasons why the community has also succeeded.
My tremendous thanks to Michael Oliveira, head librarian for the One Archives in Los Angeles, for teaching me something about queer culture and history. You can find the archives online at one.usc.edu. That's one.usc.edu. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
This Way Out and One Archives have a date with history for Talking Transgender, a Global Rally Cry, our first live event. Join an international panel discussion at One Archives or our Facebook Live audience on January 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. For details, visit thiswayout.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from John Dyer V and Carol Myers, produced with Brian DeShazer and John Dyer V. One Direction performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the Estate of Christopher David Trentum, Paul Bannon, Christopher Matthews, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. You can lend a hand by visiting thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on 4CCR Cairns, Queensland, WRNC-LP Ashland, Wisconsin, KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.